This is the Stress in the City podcast, a self-care book review show for the busy and, quite frankly, burned out. I'm your host, Brittany Nicole, and each episode I'll break down the best books in self-care to help us all figure out how to do this life thing better. Ready? Let's start the show. Welcome back. You are here with me. I am your host, Brittany Nicole. This is the Stress in the City podcast, and we are still discussing the book Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski. Last week, we jumped right in. We talked about clitorises. We talked about accelerators and brakes, and I got some really good feedback from you guys that you didn't know some of these things. I didn't know them either. So I'm happy that you are learning and enjoying. I am learning and enjoying this process as well. So I want to start with saying there's going to be a couple changes around here. As I have been thinking about content and what I want to talk about and what I'm passionate about and, just where I am in my life, I think that I want to expand from just book reviews about self-care to self-care in general. Because the truth of the matter is, I do read a lot of books, but I also watch a lot of lectures. I also read a lot of studies. I also watch tons of YouTube videos. Like, there's so much content that I'm consuming all the time about self-care and psychology and relationships, and I want to share everything. So I will continue to talk about the, some of my favorite books on self-care and mental health, but I'm expanding beyond just books because there's a lot of interesting information out there, and I love learning, so that's what we gonna do. I'm really excited for today's episode, even though it's kind of a heavy one. But this is something that I'm really passionate about, and the things that I've learned have helped me. And I'm excited, even though it's kind of hard to talk about because if it helps just one other person, then I'm satisfied. I do want to give a little trigger warning for this episode. If you're somebody that's been affected by sexual trauma or sexual violence, this may be difficult for you to hear. And, you have to go with your comfort level, your body, and where you are right now and decide for yourself, like, is this something I'm ready to listen to? And if not, that's okay. Come back later when it is. This is the internet, so it'll always be there. So just keep that in mind. We're going to be talking about sexual trauma and sexual violence today. And it's an important topic. It's important even if you are a man. It's important even if you have not experienced sexual trauma yourself, because chances are you know somebody who has, and you may not even know that they've gone through something like that. There's a statistic in the book that said 1 in 5 women is sexually assaulted in her life, and because it's such an underreported crime, they feel like it could actually be more like 1 in 3. So, if you're at dinner with your girlfriends, somebody at your table has probably experienced some form of sexual assault in their life. That's staggering. Like, that, oh man, when you really think about it and personalize it with your own family or with your own group of friends, it's like, wow, this is really a problem. And I liked, that's not the right way to explain it, but I just felt like the way this was described really illustrated it in such a unfortunately a really graphic way, but it drove the point home for me. I don't remember the name of the person. He is a rape advocate, and he said that those who have not been sexually assaulted can perhaps more clearly understand the experience of a survivor by thinking of them as having survived an attempted murder that used sex as the weapon. Oh, that drove it home for me, because it does describe like the soul crushing, destroying, ravishing effects of sexual assault and sexual violence. And, you know, using sex as the weapon, because that's what it essentially becomes, in your brain and in your body. So, we're going to talk a lot about trauma. We're going to talk about consent and coercion and what those things are. And we're going to talk about how sexual violence affects victims. So what is trauma? Here are a couple definitions that are in the book. Trauma isn't always caused by one specific incident. It can also emerge in response to persistent distress or ongoing abuse, like a relationship where sex is unwanted, even though it may be technically consensual because the targeted person says yes in order to avoid being injured, or they feel trapped in the relationship, or are otherwise coerced. Sexual trauma happens when a person has control over their body taken away from them, and sometimes that control is taken away using physical force. Sometimes that control is taken away using emotional manipulation or psychological abuse, using coercion, or it could be a scenario where, you know, there's both physical and psychological control that's happening. So I think it's important for us to really spend a lot of time talking about consent and coercion, what those things are. This is a topic that I feel like has come up a lot more in the recent years with Me Too. And it's an area where a lot of people feel confused, feel uncomfortable talking about it. And there's a lot of different opinions on, you know, what's consent, what's not consent. So what I'm going to do is just talk about some of the things that I have found. And these are actually outside of the book, some of the discussions that I've seen around consent that kind of helped me to understand it a little bit better. But at the end of the day, I think that it's something you're going to have to know in your own body. So RAIN, which is an anti-sexual violence organization, discusses enthusiastic consent. That's what we should be looking for when engaging in sexual activity with a person, is enthusiastic consent. And what that is essentially is looking for the presence of a yes rather than the absence of a no. It's like, basically, if it's not hell yes, it's no. That's, you know, their take on it. I'm actually going to include a link in the show notes so that you could, because there's a lot more to it. I'm paraphrasing for the sake of time, but check out the link in the show notes so you can see kind of their angle on enthusiastic consent. And I think that that's a good starting point, because I kind of feel like, you know, yes means yes is a little bit too simple, because you can say yes and not mean it, you know. Planned Parenthood, I thought, also had some interesting information on their site. They use the acronym FRIES to break down what consent should look like, or what consent should have. So the F in FRIES is freely given. Consent is freely given, meaning it's a decision that you're making without pressure. There's no manipulation. You're not under the influence of drugs or alcohol. It's freely given consent. The R in FRIES is for reversible, meaning you can change your mind at any time, and you should be able to do that without fear of consequence, or without being made to feel guilty or pressured to continue. So the I in FRIES is for informed. And what that means is you can only consent to something if you have the full story. If someone says, you know, if you have an agreement that you're going to use condoms and then they don't, then you haven't consented to having sex without a condom. So the E in fries is enthusiastic. They tie that in the same way Rain does. And what they said basically is, you know, enthusiastic means doing things that you want to do, not that you feel expected to do. I think enthusiasm incorporates a lot more than that. I do think it's key to note that when you're responding out of like an expectation that you're supposed to do something, that's a time where you should pause. If you're expected to do something and you're feeling hesitant toward it, what's making you go forward? Is it you? Is it guilt? Is it pressure? You know, something to consider. So the S in fries is for specific, and that means that, you know, you can consent to this act and not that, or that act and not this. It's up to you. Saying yes to one thing doesn't mean that you said yes to everything on the menu. That's not consent. So I do think some of these things are useful, but here's the model that I liked the most. And this is actually something that Emily Nagoski, the writer, the author of Come As You Are, apparently it was written on a blog that she had a while ago. And it seems like the post was taken down. I found a couple of references to the post from other people. So I am, you know, what I'm reading is based off what other people have posted that linked back to her blog post, but it's removed. So I'm working off of, you know, I don't have a direct quote from the author, I will say that, but from what I found, her model of consent, I felt like made the most sense to me, and I could see myself in some of the situations, and it kind of helped me to have a language to understand, you know, how I was feeling. So because this can be such a gray area, I think it's important to have language to explain scenarios. And I felt like the way that the language that she uses in this model helps to give language to some of these gray areas. So there's four different types of consent in this model. There's enthusiastic consent, there's willing consent, there's unwilling consent, and then there's coerced consent. So enthusiastic consent happens when you want your partner genuinely and authentically, when you don't fear, you know, any negative consequence for saying yes or saying no. And when saying no means that you're actually missing out on something that you truly want, that's enthusiastic consent. I feel like this is a way more full-bodied way of describing what enthusiastic consent would truly look like. So then there's willing consent, which is kind of a step underneath enthusiastic consent. And here's the way it's described from the blog post that I read, which again is referencing her work, but is not a direct quote. Scenarios for willing consent are: when I care about you, though I don't desire you right now. When I'm pretty sure saying yes will have an okay result, and I think maybe I'd regret saying no. When I believe that desire may begin after I say yes. So that's willing consent. And to me, what that's describing is like the state of the relationship is good. The connection between the two people is good. But the desire in the moment may not be there, but you're open to seeing where it goes. And I think that this is also, you know, a good place to be. This type of scenario to me sounds like a long-term relationship where there is commitment and trust and understanding and just realistically, you know, desire not matching up at the same time, which I think is normal. So that's willing consent. Now, underneath willing consent is unwilling consent. So these are the scenarios that are described here. Unwilling consent, the scenarios are when I fear the consequence of saying no more than I fear the consequences of saying yes. Unwilling consent is when I feel not just an absence of desire, but an absence of desire for desire. Unwilling consent is when I hope that by saying yes, you will stop bothering me, or that if I say no, you'll only keep on trying to persuade me. This is unhealthy. This is totally unhealthy. This is not consent. You know, it describes a scenario where you've said yes, but your body says no. Your heart and soul says no. So, you know, it's this to me is the gray area. This is the gray area where it's like, well, I said yes, but I didn't really want to. It's unwilling consent. And finally, there's coerced consent. And these scenarios are when you threaten me with harmful consequences if I say no. When I feel I'll be hurt if I say yes, but I'll be hurt more if I say no. Or when saying yes means experiencing something I actively dread. This scenario is describing where consent is given, but it's done purely out of fear of a consequence, whether that consequence is, you know, I don't want to physically be hurt, or I don't want to be emotionally hurt. I don't want to be shamed. I don't want to be embarrassed. I don't want there to be repercussions in the relationship. And, you know, I think sometimes we don't give enough credit to the fact that because there may not be a physical threat, that there is no threat. But if your choice whether or not to be intimate with somebody is a threat to your attachment, your body doesn't know the difference. You know, it still experiences that moment as stress. And, you know, depending on all the circumstances involved, it could be a traumatic moment. You know, I think I've been in all of these scenarios, and I think many people have. So it's helpful for me to know and understand and to be empowered with the knowledge that I have choices. And so do you. We should also talk about coercion. And I'm getting a little bit off topic from the book here. I do feel like this information goes hand in hand because, you know, when there's sexual trauma, obviously consent is taken away. And typically there is some form of coercion. In fact, there was a quote in the book about acts of sexual violence not appearing, you know, quote unquote, violent in the way that we usually think of them, as in there may not necessarily be a weapon. There may not necessarily be, you know, aggression or force, but some type of coercive, manipulative, emotionally abusive behavior that is affecting the victim's choice. So I want to talk a little bit about sexual coercion. What is that? This is a quote from Elizabeth Zeszlik. She's a professor of psychology at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. And she says, sexual coercion is when someone manipulates you into unwanted sexual activity through non-physical means. Legally, it would not necessarily be sexually assault, but at the same time, it's not really wanted sexual activity either, and you might not feel good about it afterwards. And it should signal to you that your partner is exhibiting an abusive behavior. I think this is super common. I found myself in a rabbit hole on YouTube listening to people's stories about sexual coercion, and it's really common. I'm going to play a brief clip of some of the things that, or some of the ways that we may come in contact with sexual coercion and not even realize it.
Hey, come on. My ex would do this with me, so why won't you? If you loved me, you would. Sexual coercion is when someone keeps asking after hearing no, or tries to turn your no into a yes. It's a form of sexual assault, and if you're not into it, it's not your fault.
But I said yes.
Nobody has the right to take advantage, even if you use drugs or alcohol. If you're passed out, you're not able to give informed consent. It's not your fault.
But I said yes.
Consent can never be given under pressure. If someone has given you an ultimatum, tricked you, or manipulated you, and you said the words yes, that's not consent. If you said yes, it's not your fault.
I want to talk about the ways that sexual violence affects victims. And this is not an exhaustive description, because especially, you know, this is especially brought out in the book that every person's experience is unique. And that's true. But these are some things that she's found commonly that happen. I'm going to read a quote. It says, "Each person's experience of survival is unique, but it often includes a kind of disengaged unreality. And afterward, that illusion of unreality gradually degrades, disintegrating under the weight of physical existence and burdened memory. The tentative recognition that this thing has actually happened incrementally unlocks the panic and rage that couldn't find their way to the surface before, buried as they were under the overmastering mandate to survive." That's a lot of words. That's a lot of words. I wanted to say it in her words because I felt like they were better than mine. But after I read them just now, I feel like, you know, when I read that, what I understood and what I felt is that you disconnect from yourself and you disconnect physically, emotionally, sexually, psychologically, and you don't even realize it. And, you know, the memory gets buried and unclear, and you know, it's like something that's happening in the background of your mind that you don't even realize until you do. And then you start digging and finding that there's so much there. And I can't tell you how many people that I have heard, seen, read, you know, that relate to that, and I relate to that. And it's hard. It's hard. I'm going to share some of the things that she talks about in the book that can help with navigating your way through sexual trauma. But I do want to say also, when we're talking about how it can affect you, going back to the previous episode where we talk about accelerator and brakes, experiencing sexual assault or sexual violence can miswire your accelerator and brakes. So the accelerator, remember, is what, you know, moves you toward sex, sexual activity, intimacy, sexual behaviors, and the brakes are what tell you, uh-uh, not the time, or hell no. And so, you know, if you've experienced this kind of trauma, it can miswire your accelerator and brakes. And so contexts that previously might have moved you toward sex tell you, this is a threat. You need to get up out of here. And she also brings out that survivors can find themselves locked in a pattern of sexual behavior as a way of, like, as your brain's way of redoing the traumatic experience to understand it or to overcome it in a way. It's deep, man. So many books, people, therapists have recommended the book, The Body Keeps the Score. And, oh my God. Now, I have to say, this book is not for the faint of heart. And it's not specifically about sexual trauma. It's about trauma, period. And what it taught me is that, like, it's not BS when they say, like, okay, I would hear these kind of things before and it just sounded very woo-woo and, like, hippy-dippy and whatever, like, you know, emotions get trapped in your body. And I'm like, I don't know, like, what kind of witchcraft y'all talking about with that, but that sounds ridiculous. And this book helped me to understand, no, it's actually not ridiculous at all. It is actually a biological fact that emotions and trauma get trapped in your body and your nervous system. And it shows up as disease. It shows up as anxiety. It shows up as tons of things. Reading this book, I would, at a very difficult time in my life, I would do the audiobook version, and it's like 13 hours. And I would go in the park, and I would just walk and walk and walk and cry sometimes. And it taught me so much about what I didn't even realize I was carrying. I was emotionally carrying things physically. That sounds so strange, but that's what it is. Our bodies carry our emotional baggage, and they show up in our posture. They show up in our choices and our decisions. Anyway, another book, another episode. Not going to get on The Body Keeps the Score soapbox because I'll never get off. But she recommends it as a reference for someone trying to navigate their way through sexual trauma. I recommend it as a reference for someone trying to navigate their way through being a human, any kind of trauma. We've all experienced some kind of trauma. If you are a human, you need to read this book. It will probably take you a year. That's fine. But do it. Also, she does list a couple of different approaches to healing sexual trauma. I'm not going to go into them too much in depth on this episode, but I do want to say that one of the things that she recommended was mindfulness. And this is another thing that I feel like if you are a human, you need to learn this skill. There was a point in my life where I started having severe panic attacks where, you know, I would be laying down in bed and my heart is racing so incredibly that my Apple Watch thinks I'm working out and really I'm trying to sleep. My whole body is sweating and convulsing. My brain feels like it's on fire, literally. I feel like I'm being consumed by a flame on the inside, and there's nothing that I could do about it. There's literally nothing that I could do but try not to, like, to try and focus my thoughts. And I had to force myself to learn to do this because the more anxious I got, the more upset I got, the more physically in pain I got as well. And the only thing that helped me to navigate and cope with the panic attacks when they were having was learning mindfulness meditation. It sounds really simple. It also can sound and sometimes be really boring in the beginning because basically what it is noticing your thoughts. The end. Have a great day. Noticing your thoughts. And what I learned is that I can listen to my body. I can listen to the experience of my body when I just pay attention to it. And sometimes it teaches me, like, it's very difficult for me sometimes to identify my feelings And so, you know, if I'm feeling anxious, I know this now, but my anxiety sometimes shows up as a pain in my chest. And I may not necessarily realize I'm anxious until I'm going to just be present with myself for a moment. And I'm like, oh, my chest is tight. Okay, what's on my mind? Like, what's bothering me? And I love that I have that relationship with my body now. I'm all over the place right now because I just am so excited about the things that I've learned that have helped me so much and helped me change my life. So I am going to include some resources that were recommended to me when I started to learn about mindfulness. I use the Insight Timer app for meditation. Include a link to that in the show notes as well. And one thing that she actually did not recommend in the book, not like she didn't recommend it, like she talked bad about it, but she just didn't mention it, which is actually mentioned in the book that I mentioned before, The Body Keeps the Score, is EMDR. EMDR is a type of therapy modality where during a session, you receive some type of bilateral stimulation. Commonly, it's like you're looking at a screen or a light bar or something, and like the beam of light or the dot on the screen or whatever will go back and forth, and you're watching it as you're talking with a therapist and recounting a memory or an experience. And I was curious about it. I was struggling and I was desperate to fix my brain. So I tried it out for a couple of months. And let me tell you something, okay? If you want to deal with your stuff, do EMDR. But be prepared. Be prepared because I went in for one reason and came out with a whole bunch of insight that I was not prepared for, especially the recollection of memories. EMDR is specifically for reprocessing memories. And so it's amazing how when you mentally go like to whatever you're trying to reprocess over and over again, how you can remember so much. And it's incredible. It's incredible. It's from what I have read, we still don't fully understand why EMDR works. We just understand that it works. And having tried it out for myself, I actually stopped because it was too intense. I was like, I'm gonna have to revisit this when I'm at a better place because I can't deal with all of this right now. But I do recommend it for like reprocessing traumatic events, and it's powerful. So this is where we're going to end part two of the Come As You Are book review. This episode, we talked about sexual trauma, consent, sexual coercion. And even though, you know, when we think about sex education, like we don't typically talk about these things. These are not the fun, sexy topics, you know, to talk about. But I really think trauma, consent, and coercion are an important part of sex education. I am going to be including a lot of the resources that I referenced in this episode in the show notes. I've also made some playlists on my YouTube channel with references about sexual coercion and about consent, and some other articles that I'll be linking to in the show notes if you want to dive a little bit deeper, which I recommend doing so that you can kind of establish for yourself what your boundaries are. And being armed with that information, you know, is not as fun as being armed with the information about clitorises, but it's just as important. I want to thank you for sticking with me this episode. You know, these are kind of hard topics to talk about, and it can be hard to listen to, especially if you can personally relate to anything that I talked about or shared in this episode. So thank you for sticking through it. And I appreciate all the feedback that I've gotten so far. Please continue to send me your feedback. You can email me at itsbrittanynicole@gmail.com. That's itsbrittanynicole@gmail.com. That's also the name of my Instagram handle, It's Brittany Nicole, and my website, itsbrittanynicole.com. So reach out to me. Let me know what you're thinking about this venture so far and any suggestions or feedback that you might have. I really enjoy hearing from you guys. So thanks again for listening to this week's episode, and I will see you next time, friends.